You're listening to Cannabis Health Radio. Here are your hosts, Ian Jessup and Corey Yelland.
Welcome to another episode of Cannabis Health Radio. I'm Ian Jessup.
And I'm Corey Yelland.
Our guest today has experienced the ups and downs of life, from flying with VIPs and celebrities to living on the streets, being a drug addict. Joining us today to tell her story is Anna, who lives in Switzerland. She doesn't want her real name used, so we'll respect that and call her Anna. Anna, thanks very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hi, Corey. Hi, Ian. Thank you. I feel privileged to be on your show.
Thank you.
Anna, tell us the early part of your life when you were flying around with the celebrities, the kings and queens.
It was interesting. It was very hectic. Just to go back a little bit further, I was born in Switzerland, and then my family, when I was around 4 years of age, I'm the eldest of three daughters, we moved to southern London, and I did all my schooling, education, etc. in England, and came back to Switzerland at the age of about 21 years of age. I studied business and finance with tourism, and I've been working in tourism now actually all my life. I always worked, even when I was very ill. Through my sister, who was already working with a company in Geneva, I got the job. Basically, it's like taxi flights with private clients, not knowing from one day to the next where you'll be, who you'll have. Sometimes we'd be on the go for 2 to 3 weeks, and we always had a turnus of working 10 days full on and 4 days off. And it was very interesting. I saw a lot. I met some really interesting people. I won't go into names, but one of the last flights I had was an unconfirmed flight. We flew to Tunisia, and they didn't tell me actually why and who the client was. And it ended up, as we were arriving into Tunis Airport, that we were flying off with PLO to Baghdad. This was 1991, and at the beginning of the Iraqi-Kuwaiti invasion, and all the Arabians were coming together for a big conference, and we flew in with PLO. So you can understand the situation in the country at that time. You could really nearly cut the air. I mean, it was like at the brink of war, and they took our passports off us, and we got stuck there for about, it was 5 days. On the sixth day, we could actually leave. And about a week and a half later, the invasion of Kuwait started. In that situation, and being a guide, a tour guide, I'm quite used to these kind of situations, but somehow it really got into my head. And I came back to Switzerland and found that I can't fly anymore. I felt angry. I felt anxious. And at the end of the day, I had to tell the company, I can't handle this anymore. So I left the company.
And what did you do after that, Anna?
Well, the problem was the psychological effects. It didn't help that I had, I was sexually abused also in that time, which didn't help. And at the end of the day, I took all my stuff and moved in again with my mum, who was living in Zurich at the time. She couldn't actually handle it either, because she couldn't understand why a person who was so outgoing, who had conquered every hindrance in her past life, was now sitting at home, not wanting even to go outside the house, crying. She couldn't handle it. And at the end of the day, I can handle it either. And I don't know, I didn't have a death wish as such, but I ended up at the time in Zurich. Some of people might know about this. We had the needle park where people from all around Switzerland, from all over the world were coming to consume drugs. And they closed that. It was just behind the main station in Zurich. And the whole lot ended up a few kilometers downstream. And the situation was really terrible. But I didn't actually see all the horror and what people were going through. I was more curious. People were sitting around. People had time to talk. Of course, they were not actually friends. And I remember thinking, I just want to try this. You know, I just want to forget everything. I just want to try it. And I think actually the first time I didn't even do it myself. Someone did it for me. And I was adamant that, you know, I don't have an addictive personality. I'm quite outgoing. Everybody's saying you don't belong here. What the hell are you doing here? But it took me in. And during 3 months, I was living on the streets, basically. With all the police stuff, all the problems, I mean, it was pretty difficult. And thinking about it now, it was pretty ironic that I even wanted to be in prison for a weekend, because on Sundays you always get fried chicken in the prison, you know. So what actually saved me was that I contracted hepatitis. Mm-hmm. A, I already had from traveling, and then B and C, and B became chronic. And before I knew it, I was really very sick. I went down to 30 kilos. I'm quite a tall person, quite athletic. I always enjoyed sport in my earlier years.
30 kilos is strictly skin and bone, isn't it?
Yeah. I was puking water, basically. You know, nothing could stay. And they put me on at that time it was interferon and ribavirin, which is the same medication that some HIV people get. Which totally suppresses the immune system and then attacks the virus.
It's actually a form of chemotherapy, isn't it, Anna?
I didn't actually know at the time. And if I knew what I know now, I don't think I would have done it, because it really nearly killed me. I had to go through it for 12 months because I had a genotype, which was very complicated. You know, at that time... Yeah, it was just a very difficult time. But I got through it. And with the Swiss authorities at that time, they were really, because of this needle park and everything, they were seeing that basically the war on drugs wasn't working. You know, all the all the policing and everything wasn't working. And they then started handing out needles, clean needles, opening up centers where people could consume their bought stuff safely. Then they had substitute programs, methadone, heroin, et cetera, et cetera. I was in a couple of these programs. But because it was all very new, they were always wanting to keep people. You know, I just wanted to get out there as quickly as possible. I didn't want to have one dependency taken over by another, chemically or whatever. I did the substitution programs, psychiatrical help, et cetera, et cetera, hospitals, weaned myself off it and started putting on weight again, getting healthy again. And then I could, when it was getting better again, I applied for jobs again, as I had done all my life, you know. And the stigma was difficult. I worked actually for the Swiss National Railways. I got a job And I didn't actually believe that they were going to employ me. I was very honest. I had to complete a report saying what my previous medical problems were. And it still took me on. So that was great. And I started working. It was very interesting. I enjoyed it. Until one day I was working at one station. At that time, we had to load bicycles into the trains within 5 or 10 minutes, like school classes who were going on a day trip. There's two of us, and it was about 20 bikes, and about by the 10th bike, with a turning movement and pushing the bike up into the to my colleague, I had a multiple discus hernia in my back. And because of my past situation, I was adamant that I wanted to keep the job, and I went through every conservative type of therapy that you could take, physiotherapy, alternative therapies with Chinese therapy, walking, you know, everything that I could do to help, but nothing helped, and it got worse and worse, you know. And we were sitting at the main station in Zurich. You have to go through, or at the airport, you have to go through at least 4 hours when you don't move. You are sitting, selling tickets, train tickets, travel agents work. So you were sitting a lot of the time and working against your body, basically, with the computer and the till, and not being able to drink as well. My situation became worse and worse and worse. At the end of the day, after a lot of medicines, I was on strong opioids and morphine at the end. They actually put me into the Emory, and they saw situation. I was already limping. My foot nerves weren't working anymore. I fell down in the main station. I fell down about 10 flights of stairs because my foot got caught, and I didn't actually have a lot of acceptance or help at my workplace. It ended up into mobbing. I had to say about the hepatitis. People started putting names on their cups and on their glasses because they thought, I could infect them. And I was very open. I said, you know, if anybody wants to know about it, come and ask me. I can tell you about it, you know. But it was all very, they thought I was trying to get out of doing work and doing a Blue Monday or a Blue Friday and this kind of stuff. And at the end of the day, to cut a long story short, I was operated on my back three times. The last time, the back had to be stiffened because there was no cartilage matter in my lumbar vertebrae anymore. And at the same time, when I was going through those things, they found out that my hip was also dislocated, most probably from the age of birth, which was also adding to all the pain. So not only did I have all these operations, I was off for maybe 6 weeks, 8 weeks, back to work. Then I'd have the problem again that the discus hernia would then push again, back into hospital, another operation. And the third time when it happened, the company put me at a station where I was working by myself. So I had to, we have baggage as well that we have to put through the trains and all this kind of stuff, heavy brochures from the travel agent. You know, I was doing work that I shouldn't actually have done. At the end of the day, the Swiss National Railway came to me and said, you know, we can't handle this anymore. You've been ill so long. During that time, I also started the hepatitis virus course, and they just said, you know, we can't employ you anymore. And I was actually legally protected through the Swiss railway company in that they paid my salary for 2 years through the insurance. But when it came down to putting me up for an invalid pension, I actually didn't want one because I actually wanted to keep working, you know. they put me up for it anyway, and I try to reintegrate doing different courses with other companies. But I had to say, you know, I can't handle it. I was still in so much pain, physical and mental pain, that I couldn't handle the workplace, you know.
When I look at this list of things that you were coping with, so you come through an addiction to heroin and cocaine, then you get Hep C. You get on the trains, and you're suffering from depression, spinal fusion, chronic pain, neuropathic pain, restless legs, muscle tremors, weak foot, torn tendons in your foot, migraines, insomnia, stomach and digestive issues. I mean, that's overwhelming.
Yeah. Well, it was just my life, you know. I mean, you kind of sometimes you despair, sometimes you have more lighter moments where you think, you know, things, you always hope that things get better. And I'm quite an optimistic kind of personality. I'm quite outgoing. I love people. I like talking to people. I don't have any Berührungsangst, you would say in Swiss. I can't think of the German word, the English word.
Anxiety.
I don't discriminate, especially because I saw what kind of people were actually also engaging in taking drugs. I mean, Switzerland has, you know, has a population of 8 million, and there are over 500,000 people actively consuming cannabis, and all the other drugs, the amphetamines and everything. We have tests that they do in the water, where they can test from the WCs how much is being consumed. And Zurich is a hotspot, you know. And it's not just only people of people that haven't had good schooling or haven't had good chances in life. I mean, there's a lot of bankers and CEOs, and but of course, that's a different story if you have money, you know.
That's right. And how did you discover cannabis? How did you come on that?
My a good friend of mine who had been working also at the railways and left, her brother had pancreatic cancer and died at the age of 41, which really shocked me. I saw how he deteriorated and what the doctors were doing with the chemo. I mean, it was terrible to watch. And it got me thinking, you know, it really got me thinking. And I started researching, actually, for her, in her name, and because it just interested me. I mean, I've always been interested in biology. I actually wanted to study biology, but I had problems with physics and chemistry at school, and that's why I didn't do it. I did German, art, and English for English, what do you call it, A-levels, you know. But anyway, so I started researching, and I very quickly found Rick Simpson's film Run from the Cure. And through that, got in touch with Jindrich Bayer, a guy from, he's from
Czech Republic.
Yeah. And then we started chatting, and he asked me if I would be interested in translating one of his books into German. And I thought, well, okay, I'm at home anyway, and I have my pension, I have my family, I have my husband. I'm not working, but I'm still fairly active as far as my body allows. And so I started translating it, and of course got to know more and more about cannabis, how to make the different preparations, all the testimonials from different people, etc. And I got fixed. I mean, not fixed in the sense that I got addictive, but I was so drawn into all this information and that I'd never heard of before, you know?
Yeah, it really is amazing, isn't it? I think I'm kind of the same way. Corey got me drawn into this. And I was one of those individuals who knew nothing about cannabis, marijuana. Always thought that if you smoked, you were a pothead and just wanted to get drugged up. And had absolutely no idea that this could be used as medicine. And when you start to take it as medicine, it does remarkable things to the human body.
Mm-hmm.
And you experienced that yourself. Corey, as you know, cleared herself of anal canal cancer using it. She was supposed to be dead 5 years ago.
I'm here.
She's alive and kicking today. And we talked to, you are the 90th person we've talked to.
Okay.
And, you know, nearly all of them have had remarkable health changes as a result of using cannabis. Many of them were addicted to opiates. Mm-hmm. And
well, I think I was, you know, I was addicted to the legal medicine because, but on the other hand, it didn't help. You know, I went through so many different medicines, anti-everything, and morphine, the whole Vioxx, Tylor, all these kind of stuff. And, you know, I was getting, it helped basically with the pain, but I had so many, side effects?
Side effects, yeah. How has the cannabis changed your health?
Okay, I don't smoke. I smoke cigarettes, and I'm trying to stop smoking cigarettes. But my husband is a smoker, and he's not a cannabis smoker. He is very skeptical, also has a heart problem, so he's very weary. But it has helped me in that through families that live in Seattle, I started importing cannabis butter. You call it?
Yes.
B-U-D-D-E-R, which is coconut-infused cannabis, mm-hmm. Cannabis-infused coconut oil. And at the beginning, you know, I was always very cautious because of the illegality, etc. Is the stuff going to actually arrive? How is it going to arrive? And although that my family members tried their best to pack the stuff up, you know, sometimes it arrived here. Really, it was the cardboard box would be soaked in oil, you know, with a really strong smell. And the people at the post office would give me looks. You know, what the hell is this person doing? But I managed to keep that going for about two and a half years. And
did it make a difference?
It made a hell of a difference. I didn't believe it at first. I really didn't believe it. I started making my... I don't really like the taste that much. It wasn't that nice a taste. So I mix it with chocolate one-to-one. And then it started... I had to find out how much do I... how much can I take for my condition? I only take my medibles in the evening. I find that I can sleep better. I can fall asleep better. Before, I was like tossing and turning for maybe 2 or 3 hours. I fall asleep straight away, within a half an hour. I take it 2 hours before going to bed, and I can feel it coming on. It has reduced my pain to the point that I can still feel the pain, but the knife edge pain that I used to have is not here anymore. It makes me want to make me move myself again. You know, it doesn't stop me from moving myself. My whole digestive system has gone back to normal. I was, you know, being on opiates, I think most people know what that's like. You know, it's, you just don't have normal bowel movements. I put on weight because of all the cortisone that I was taking. I was bloated. I had strong migraines with puking, with aura. I think you call it in English, aura?
Yes, right. That's correct.
That's right.
Yeah. What else? That's it, I think, mainly.
Is that all?
I'm sure there's more, you know, but that's the main things. And then I'm thinking, well, if this cannabis butter does this for me, what would I actually do if I made my own tinctures or oils? So I hope this is not going to be difficult for me because of the Swiss legal situation. A lot of people do it. I was in Mallorca last summer, a spring, and took home 10 seeds of an indica type. I think an Afghan kush or something. I don't really even know, because I took the sticker off the bag just in case that I would have problems going through customs, but I didn't. And of course, I've never grown myself. I mean, I had no idea. So I just started. And the guy said, you know, you don't even have to put them in water first, just put them in good soil and then water and see what happens, you know. And all 10 plants came. I had a jungle on my terrace, which is quite secluded, but we have houses to our left with neighbors. They couldn't actually see them, but of course they could smell them, you know. And but they're pretty lenient about the situation. They know what I've gone through. And I just told them I'm making tinctures and oils and creams and salves and edibles and all this kind of stuff. And that's when he started. I grew my plants. I harvested them. And I still have, I'm still doing that now. I'm trying to get rid of it. trying to make my own medicine, basically, so that it doesn't, so I can still use it while it's quite fresh. Although, and that's what I wanted to ask you about, I've heard that when buds get to the air, they become CBN.
I think that, if I remember correctly, and, you know, I am no expert on this.
Yeah.
Let me be very clear about that. But it's my understanding, and I'm not sure if this is correct, that there's more CBN available just before the buds are ready.
Okay.
So before they're fully mature.
Okay. But anyway, I'm learning by doing. There's so many people out there that with their recipes, et cetera, et cetera. But on the other hand, the whole chemistry is of interest to me. I've been at a big conference at the University of Bern, which was last November. I think it was the same week, Corey, that you were in Prague.
Right.
And met up with Bedrakan people from Holland. I had no idea what's actually going on in the field. There's going to be a lot of change in the next few years,
yeah.
which I embrace, you know?
You know, Anna, I'm going to be posting, if I remember to do so today, an article that tells you at what temperature each cannabinoid decarboxylates at.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'll put that up. And tag you in it so you can have a look.
Okay. And the only thing that I haven't done is make the concentrated form. Basically, because I'm really worried about the...
But blowing yourself up?
Yeah.
You know what? There's a few ways around that. We can maybe do a Skype call later.
Yeah. But, you know, I just think that it's my body. And it's my choice what I put in my body. And through the experiences that I've had to make, not all good, I know what's good for me and what's not good for me anymore. And I don't want to go down the allopathic medicine anymore. You know, at the moment, I have pains in my upper body. And my doctor says, you know, I'll after the age of 50 in Switzerland, you can have every 5 years, you can have a mammography. And I've been under CT and MREs, et cetera, so much radiation over the last 20 years. It makes me sick just thinking about it. And so I want to go and do a thermography.
Yeah.
Know what that is?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and see, you know, because they say that they can detect different problems up to 7 years before that a mammography can do. So I'm open, but of course it's not all about just cannabis. I mean, I try to live a healthy life. I'm juicing, I'm using local products, I'm as far as I can when I don't have any pains, I try to get out. I want to buy a trampoline. I want to stop smoking cigarettes. I want to get my husband off smoking cigarettes. But I find that when I use my chocolate that I've made, that I don't even have the desire to smoke, not even cigarettes. No. So I think there's some kind of link here. In Switzerland now, the last couple of months, shops have been popping up all over Switzerland selling CBD products, because they have now a niche. In Switzerland, you're not allowed to have cannabis products that have more than 1% THC content. So they have now got strains or have got holder strains that have very low THC levels and making everything out of them. And but I suspect that there will be another kind of cut down or whatever. It's tough at the moment. People want it legalized, but it feels sometimes like you're hitting head against a brick wall, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Anna, it was a pleasure to talk to you. By the way, your English is superb.
Oh, thank you. I don't get a lot of chance to talk English anymore, I'm afraid.
No, but it is excellent.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah. No, and you have a very interesting story. I think you're doing, Corey, wouldn't you say she's doing all the right things? Taking cannabis,
yes.
Juicing, exercising, making her own tinctures.
Yeah, I'm as I said to Anna yesterday, I'm really quite in awe of her and her story. She's been through so much and come out the other side in a very positive and successful manner.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anna, it was wonderful to talk to you, and we'll keep in touch.
Pleasure. We'll keep in touch.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And I just think if anybody from Switzerland or anybody's listening, maybe some people might know me, but, you know, it's just my story. There's thousands of people out there doing the same, having identical problems. It was my way. It was my way of doing things. And, you know, I'm on my way. I'm on my journey. And if I can help anybody out there, I'll be happy to do so.
Great. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. And that's it, another edition of Cannabis Health Radio. Wherever you are in the world, thanks very much for listening.
You've been listening to the Cannabis Health Radio podcast. Visit our website, cannabishealthradio.com, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter.